Billy, I'm an alcoholic. Can you all hear me? Yes. Awesome. So my home group is a Tell It Like It Is group in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Little warning announcement. I'm not in Palm Beach right now. I'm in the middle of the mountains, like on the border of Arkansas and Missouri, in a place called the Ozarks. So if my Wi-Fi gets bad, somebody just please raise your hand or do something and I will end my video feed and we'll go to only audio, but hopefully I will be okay. I talked to the manager at the hotel and he tells me a lot of people are not using Wi-Fi at the hotel on Sunday mornings. They're all out at Easter service. So that should help me out. Good morning, everyone. And really thank you for your service and for being here. Anyone who knows me knows that I think that we should put a free AA group pamphlet in every big book that we sell. That's how important I think that pamphlet is. Now, I don't know if everyone has a copy of the latest one in front of you. Some of you may, some of you may not. You can quickly go to AA.org, P16. You can search P16 and get it. But I just want to walk through just some of the things that I find interesting about the AA group pamphlet. First, I think what's really interesting is before you get to the six basic sections of this pamphlet, there's an introduction, a section on how to use the pamphlet. But right at the very start, it's how do you use the pamphlet, the introduction, and sandwiched in the middle of those two things are not all 12 traditions, but for some reason, two that are particularly called out right at the start of the pamphlet. On page 7, singleness of purpose is called out right away. And what it says there is, there are those who predict that AA may well become a new spearhead for a spiritual awakening throughout the world. When our friends say these things are both generous and sincere, but we of AA must reflect that such a tribute and such a philosophy prophecy could prove to be a heady drink for most of us. That is, if we really became to believe this to be our real purpose of AA and we commenced to behave accordingly. And then it says, our society, therefore, will prudently cleave to its single purpose, the carrying of the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Let us resist the proud assumption that since God has enabled us to do well in one area, we are destined to be a channel of saving grace for everybody. I can't even stress that statement more, especially in today's AA. And I am the first one to realize that most social scientists and social engineers and very well-written authors and very well-written theologians, psychologists, psychiatrists, the leading people in all those, all rate AA as one of the greatest discoveries of the 20th century. And that's awesome. But I always like to start out and say that AA is like a ruler that you get in school when you're in elementary school. It's tall and very narrow. We are really good at one particular thing. And I know that the big book, I'm actually at a convention this weekend. I'm going to grab the program quickly because something caught my eye this morning that made me think why things go off the rails sometimes. The theme for this year's convention that I'm at is spiritual principles would solve all my problems. And that just gets taken out of context all the time in Alcoholics Anonymous, that sure, if you work the 12 steps, if you have other problems, which most people have other problems, lots of different other problems, they tend to get better the more you are involved in AA and involved in the steps. But that's a byproduct. It's an after effect. It's not the reason for getting sober or coming to AA. And sometimes people become so in love with the message in the Big Book that they think it's so powerful that it can cure all these other problems. But right at the start of the AA group pamphlet, the first tradition that it calls out is singleness of purpose. It then calls out anonymity and the importance of anonymity. Anonymity is still half of our name. It's still Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's become very difficult in the modern age because, let's face it, people don't want to be anonymous about anything. I mean, we live in a world where people actually don't want to be anonymous for things that you don't want to, you're not proud of. But people want to be loud to the whole world. And technology has only opened that door to the whole world even wider and wider. And then when you get into the pamphlet, which really starts on page 12, I just want to point out that the pamphlet is broken down into six sections. There's the group section where AA service structure begins. There's the how an AA group functions section. There's the AA group's relation with others in the community section. There's the principles before personalities section. And there's the how the AA group relates to AA as a whole section. And then what AA does not do. And if you're familiar with some of our other literature, a lot of times in AA, it's more important to know what we don't do than what we do. And then it goes on to AA and alcoholism and a couple of other things. But I want to start at that section that says the group where AA's service structure begins. I just want to stress that the AA group is the single most important component and unit of the AA service structure. And that's the way it was always supposed to be. It is not the district. It is not the area. It is not all the area officers. It is not the General Service Board. And it is not AA World Services and the AA Grapevine. And unfortunately, sometimes AA follows trends from the outside world. Those trends seep into AA. They just, it happens. I mean, I'm a realist and I'm practical. And, you know, in a lot of the world, large centralized, if you look at government and you look at corporations, large centralized organizations are just very, very common. And if I look at the AA service structure, especially the last 30 years since 1990 or so, it seems that a lot of things that the groups used to take care of have now become centralized by areas or even the General Service Office. There's a line in the 12 concepts that says, the General Service Office should do for the groups what they can't do for themselves, but it shouldn't do for them what they can do for themselves. And so I can't obviously go through this whole pamphlet, but there's a few things I really want to key in on. On page 6, it says this pamphlet is designed as a handy information tool and suggested guide for an AA group. It serves as a complement to the AA service manual, the AA group handbook, and other literature. designed for easy reference. The pamphlet covers four main areas: what an AA group is, how a group functions, group relations with others in the community, and how the group fits in the structure as AA as a whole, except that there's six main sections inside the pamphlet. Well, it says four there. When you get to page, I want to say the introduction, which starts on page 10, it starts right off with concept one. The final responsibility and the ultimate authority for AA World Services should always reside in the collective conscience of our whole fellowship. Now, I was going to bring my service manual up on the screen quick, but I'll go past that for a second. It then goes on to say that Alcoholics Anonymous is an upside-down organization because the ultimate responsibility resides with the groups. If you happen to have a service manual and read the first line in the narrative of Concept 1, it talks about the groups again. And I just want to point out that there's a couple of things it doesn't talk about. It doesn't talk about the meetings. AA meetings have no say in the Alcoholics Anonymous service structure. They never have, and they still don't. It's the AA groups, not the AA meetings. And then, even harder for some people to accept, is that individual AA members do not have a say. The only way an individual AA member has a say, it's what an AA member has in common with an AA meeting. An AA member has a say in what goes on in AA if they place their vote at the group they belong to, a group that has a GSR, a group that has a GSR that actually attends an area assembly, a group that has a GSR who actually comes back from that area assembly and shares information with the group, and meetings. AA members who go to meetings have a say in the future of AA if they have a home group where they exercise their one vote. If you go to page 12, it's a very simple question at the top there. What is an AA group? And it says, as the long form of tradition 3 clearly states, our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover, nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered today for sobriety may call themselves an AA group. Tell you a funny story, little urban legend history in AA. There's a past trustee who's passed away now. He was a U.S. trustee at large in the early 90s, late 80s. His name was Don P. He was from Aurora, Colorado. If you go on to any of the online tape libraries, you can find him talking his story, the big book, the concepts. But he started the new AA group in Colorado in the 90s. And what he called it was an AA group because he got it right from there. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group. And you know what the funny thing is? GSO rejected it the first time. They were like, what kind of name is this? An AA group. And Don said, I got it right from the pamphlet, right from our literature. Any two or three alcoholics may call themselves an AA group. And an AA group met at 6 a.m. on Fridays, first at St. Francis Hospital in Denver, and then at another place. But it goes on to say, further clarification of an AA group may be found in the 12 Concepts World Service in Warranty 6, Concept 12. And then it lists out a couple of the warranties. And then it goes into something that's so important, especially in today's AA, when everybody wants to be specialized. It says some AAs come together as specialized AA groups for men, women, young people, doctors, gays, and others. And then it gives you the requirements of when a specialized AA group can call itself an AA group. It's listed right there. It says if the members are all alcoholic, that's the first checkbox. Are the members of the group all alcoholic? Check. And then it says, if they open the door to all alcoholics who seek help, regardless of profession, gender, or other distinction, and they meet all other aspects defining an AA group, they may call themselves an AA group. That's a pretty strong statement. If they open the door to all alcoholics who seek help. So let me use a woman's meeting. Since I'm a man, it's easier for me to use a woman's meeting because I've never been to a woman's meeting. Even though there are a few times in my life when I've liked to be a fly on the wall in a woman's meeting, I would love to listen in. My AA curiosity would get the best of me. And when it says, open the door to all alcoholics who seek help, they're not talking about me who's curious and wants to be a fly on the wall. That's not seeking help. That's being nosy. I don't care if you have the greatest women's group in the world. If a man who needs help shows up and you don't let him stay, you're no longer an AA group. You don't meet the requirement. If you're the greatest men's meeting in the world and a woman shows up who needs help and you don't let them stay, you simply do not meet the requirement to be an AA group. If you're a gay or LGBT meeting, same thing. The struggling sick alcoholic has to be our number one purpose. But it's one of those questions that gets asked a lot. And sometimes it's bad news. You know, a lot of times people say, well, you know, we have people who say it's not AA. Well, obviously we just read in the pamphlet, they're not right. It is AA. You're allowed to have a woman's meeting, a men's meeting, whatever. But then a lot of the people who participate in those meetings are not aware that the only way it stays an AA meeting is if it opens the door to everybody. And then it goes on to what I was just referencing. Is there a difference between a meeting and a group? And it says most AA members meet in AA groups as defined by the long form of our third tradition. However, some AA members hold AA meetings that differ from the common understanding of a group. These members simply gather at a set time and place for a meeting, perhaps for convenience or other special situations. The main difference between meetings and groups is that AA groups generally continue to exist outside the prescribed meeting hours, ready to provide 12-step help when needed. Again, I'm going to go back to Don P. because he had a really good, easy way to explain this. And again, a little disclaimer. For my example, in my meeting example, the meeting starts with the Serenity Prayer and ends with the Lord's Prayer. I don't care what prayers you use at your meeting. It's absolutely none of my business. I'm long out of that argument. I am every day trying to quit the debating society, as the literature suggests. I am out of that debate for a long time. But for my example, the meeting starts with the Serenity Prayer and ends with the Lord's Prayer. And Don used to always say, you can judge the quality of a meeting between the Serenity Prayer and the Lord's Prayer. The quality of just the meeting. But if you want to judge the quality of the group, then you want to judge the time period between the Lord's Prayer and the next time the Serenity Prayer is read to open that next meeting of the group. What is the group doing in between that time? Do they have a GSR? Are they connected to AA as a whole? If you have a central office or an intergroup, do you have an intergroup or central office rep? Do you fellowship? Do you go out for a meal after your meeting? Or if something is happening between meetings, an anniversary is something, that you get together and celebrate? Wherever you meet, whether it's a church or a community center, are you engaged with those people so that if they run into people who need AA, they know to come to you and send people to your group? Does your group do some public information or cooperation with professional community work on a limited basis like a group can do? Is it putting literature in maybe the local police station or library? Or does the group encourage its members that? I can tell you honestly, I just had a situation. I had a change in my doctor, and I guess it's the first time in like 7 years I have a new doctor. And when I was going, and of course I'm getting older. You know, I used to be able to go into a doctor's office and it was like a 30-second discussion about my past medical history. And now I am finding myself older and it takes a little more time. And she saw that I checked on my box that I drink no alcohol. That was one of the choices. There's a question, do you use illicit drugs? I wrote no. There was a question, how much do you drink? And then it had like none at all, less than 2 a week, 4 a week. First of all, my category wasn't even on there for when I drank. I'm just letting you know that. What they consider the maximum is just so far out of touch with how I drink. It's really, I realize how absurd and abnormal my relationship with alcohol is. But anyway, I checked, I don't drink at all. And when she got to that page interviewing me, she said, oh, you don't drink at all, nothing? And I had written on the form, I just wrote right below it, 32 years sober. And I said, no, I said, I wrote on the form. I said, I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous for 32 years. And now this is a very, very well-recommended, well-trained doctor. Highly recommended from the best schools there are. And you know what she said to me? She said, well, do you have like a drink a month or something? Like, that's what she said. It's what she said. And I said, no, I said, I'm definitely an alcoholic. I said, I can't safely drink. I said, when I drink, I can't stop. And I said to her, I said, you know, I don't want to disrespect you. I said, but it sounds like you're not familiar with alcoholism or with AA. And she said, no, I'm really not. And, you know, I spent probably the next half hour kind of telling her about AA, a little bit about me getting sober as a teenager and coming into AA as a teenager. And it was eye-opening to me. And, you know, and people say, well, what kind of CPC work can a group do? Well, if you have a group of 20 people and they all have, that's 20 doctors right there. That's 20 doctors who maybe don't know about Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I once heard the, if you've ever read, he's a past Class A trustee, Dr. George Valiant, and he's still alive. He's retired, but he was the head of alcoholism at Harvard and considered by many to be the world's expert on alcoholism. And, you know, he said funny things in public He said he got paid $300 an hour to convince rich people to go to AA. You know, he said that once. But he also said something once that really caught my attention. He said, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about how many alcoholics die of alcoholism. He said, but I think the sadder fact is how many alcoholics die of alcoholism who never heard about AA along the way. And that's our job. And so I just wanted to point that out about what you can do in between meetings, but there is definitely a difference between a meeting and a group. It says, how do you become a group member? It says the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, tradition 3. Thus, group members require no formal application. Just as we are members of AA if we say we are, so are we members of a group if we say we are. I would just point out that that's a little editorial, very liberal editorial use of tradition 3. Besides getting past the short form, which the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Yes, if you're an alcoholic. It's not a desire to stop drinking if you eat too many brownies or you play too many lottery tickets or whatever else. And that last line drives me crazy. Just as we are members of AA, if we say we are, that's a paraphrasing of the last paragraph in the narrative in the 12 and 12 on tradition 3, where it says clearly every alcoholic is a member when they say they are. It then goes into open and closed meetings. And I am a big believer, just I'll say this before I go into it, that we don't have two sets of traditions, steps, concepts, or our literature. One to apply to in-person and one to apply to digital, online. We have one set. One set applies to all. And so it says right here, closed meetings are for AA members only or for those who have a drinking problem and have a desire to stop drinking. So that's a magic, magic sentence right there for closed meetings. It's you have to be one or the other. You have to be either an alcoholic. And if you're not an alcoholic, the only second bucket of entrance at a closed meeting is to have a drinking problem and a desire to stop drinking, which I'm sure a lot of you, like me, have heard people tell other people, oh, well, I really never drank. It's a closed meeting. And you hear somebody say, just tell them you have a desire to stop drinking. That's not what our literature says. Our literature is very clear. A desire to stop drinking as long as you have a drinking problem. It says open meetings are available to anyone interested in Alcoholics Anonymous's program of recovery from alcoholism. Non-alcoholics may attend open meetings as observers. So that's very clear. Open meetings are not supposed to be meetings of all addictions anonymous. It's not what they are. In fact, an open meeting has more of a responsibility to be truer to AA than a closed meeting. An open meeting is kind of our showplace to the world. It's kind of where we put AA on display to the world. I was at a meeting last night and yesterday at this convention I'm at. And the mayor of this small town welcomed everyone. He came to the convention. the manager of the hotel welcomed everyone. So glad after the conference not being here for 2 years during COVID, wanted to welcome everyone and let them know how happy they were to have AA back. And, you know, those two men talks a lot about their character. They didn't just welcome and leave. They both stayed for the AA meeting that they were present at. And we have a responsibility to put the best AA on display for them as possible. And then you think about when we have a convention or a conference. I'm sure some of you have been involved in a convention or a conference. And one of the things you have to realize is that usually the AA member has sacrificed some of their time during the year to be part of this convention or conference. And so that means usually like their spouse or their children or some other person who's heard nothing except this conference all year while you've been working on it, and they're so sick of hearing about it. You know, like I talk to young people's parents all the time, and they're like, I keep hearing about this PA thing or this Icky PA thing or this Aki PA thing. And it's all I've heard my kid talk about the whole year. And some of those people decide, well, if it was that important to my loved one, I want to go. I'm going to go to the banquet. I want to go to the meeting. And that's where AA is on display. Same with the waiters and waitresses who are working. And don't even get me going about the front desk of a hotel. Breaks my heart sometimes. I sometimes don't even want somebody at the hotel desk to know I'm in AA based on how I hear somebody online at the desk talking to the people behind the desk. Open AA is where we're on display. And at a regular open AA meeting, it's bad enough with parents and family. But what about when someone who has real contact with people like us decides they want to go to an open meeting to see what it's all about? You know who those people are. They're social workers, probation officers, school guidance counselors, nurses, doctors. We have to put on display AA so that they would want to send somebody they run into who's like us to AA. And that's the real question. Are we putting on an attractive message, an atmosphere and behavior so that someone who runs into someone dying of alcoholism would want to send them to Alcoholics Anonymous? It goes on to list what kind of groups, what kind of meetings do AA groups hold. It talks about discussion meetings. It talks about speaker meetings. Talks about beginners meetings and step meetings or big book meetings. Talks about business meetings and special occasions. It talks about group inventory. Some of these suggested topics I think are okay. The others I would probably never use in my life. I prefer topics that are right out of the literature. I think the best topic for an AA meeting, if it's a discussion meeting, is right out of the literature. I think the downfall of open AA is open discussion meetings where they let everybody share. And listen, I'm sure, I don't know how many of us are here right now, 51. I'm sure I'm not the only one who has a couple of other problems on a good day and a lot of other problems on a bad day. I'm sure everyone else here has another problem or two. But that's not what open AA meetings are for. It's not for me to bring my other problems there. It's for me to share about the grace of Alcoholics Anonymous and the power of the 12 steps. That's what I'm supposed to do. I'm not even sure we even were supposed to ever have open discussion meetings, but we do. It talks about speaker meetings. And the one thing I want to say, because again, I can't go over everything in this pamphlet, but I marked up last night a couple of things I wanted to make sure I didn't forget to say. And here's the number one rule about a speaker meeting. Don't blame a bad speaker for being a bad speaker. They can't help it. They're just doing what they do. You blame the chairperson or the speaker seeker or whatever they call the person. If it's a convention, the program committee or chair. It's a real responsibility to select speakers at an AA group. And to take time, and especially if it's an open speaker meeting. You have a little bit of leeway if it's a closed meeting. But if it's an open speaker meeting or a convention, you are putting AA on display. And you have to take a lot of time to really think about who should be the speaker. There's a thing here about suggested AA procedures. All I want to say about that is, if you are a group, I don't care if you call them guidelines or bylaws, call them whatever you want. But have some simple, not complicated, not overly authoritative, not overly dictatorship-like, but have a group of guidelines that you reached via group conscience so that they're clear and for everybody to see. And in my experience, and this is just my experience, if you're deciding whether to have Earl Grey or English breakfast tea, or you're deciding whether to have a sheet cake or cupcakes at your anniversary, majority vote is fine. But in my experience, well-structured, well-run groups that have guidelines, one of the things they have in those guidelines is that to change the guidelines requires a substantial unanimity vote, 2/3 or better, so that the group can really think about it. Some groups have things where you just can't vote on something the same day. If you want to change something in the group procedure, you change it to the secretary, and the secretary announces it for a month so that everybody knows it's going to be discussed. My only suggestion here is to have some type of guidelines. On page 16, it talks about self-support and the seventh tradition. I'll just be a heretic and go way out on a limb here. I'll just give you a simple little task that it's helped other people. The long form of the seventh tradition says every AA group is self-supporting by the voluntary contributions of their own members. For too long in AA, we've become a dollar or $2 in the basket, or announce at other meetings that your meeting needs support. If your meeting needs support, I have a news public service announcement. You should not be at other groups asking for support. You should be taking your group's inventory and figuring out why you are where you are. That's what you should be doing. Not going to other groups saying we need support. And if it's money, I just want to share this. And this is why it's so important that we have one home group. And granted, I deal with finance and economics at work on a macro and micro level. So I am always fascinated by the economy of AA. The economy of AA is only so big. There are only so many AA members and so much disposable income. And sometimes why we it's amazing the AA business plan. We want to get more money from people who have no money, newcomers. It's a horrible, horrible business plan. You know, we want to be like, how do we educate newcomers on how much to put in the basket? Newsflash. Don't, do not depend on newcomers. Can you still see me? You can't see me anymore? Okay. So my Wi-Fi must be, how about now? I just moved a little bit. It's a very simple exercise, a spiritual exercise. It sounds like a math exercise, but it's actually a spiritual exercise. For 1 month, start on day one, end on the 30th of the 31st. Keep track of every meeting you go to and how much money you put in the basket. This exercise is not about the amount. If you have no money to put in, just write zero. Who cares? If you have 10 cents or $1 or $5, just write it. But at the end of that month, create two buckets of money. All the money you put in your home group's basket and all the money you put in other meetings' baskets. And take a look at where you're putting your seventh tradition as an AA group member. Truthfully, my belief is that if 75% or more is not going to your home group, you might want to take a look at that. We were not supposed to support the whole AA world. We were supposed to support our AA home group. And then our home group would have enough money to send our GSR to the assembly and enough money to pay our rent and enough money maybe to have an anniversary cake. And then at the end, enough money to send off to our district and our area and contribute to the general service office. But if we're diluting our AA money and throwing it in baskets all over the place, and I am not saying, by the way, don't put money in another group's basket. I'm not saying that. I'll put money in another group's basket, but not as much. And here's the other thing that's different about a home group. I had something happen at work about a month ago. Work and AA. For a two-week period, which was four meetings of my home group, I did not get to attend my home group. My seventh tradition does not depend on my attendance, if that's my group. Has nothing to do with me being there. It has to do with me being a group member and supporting my home group. So that day when I went back, it doesn't matter what I usually put in the basket, but I can tell you I put it in the basket times five. I made up for the days I wasn't there. And, you know, things like Venmo and Cash App and PayPal have helped us here. Because now you can make one contribution a month if you want. There's so many ways to do it. But it's so important that our groups are self-supporting. And here's the urban myth about a coffee pot and a resentment. Everybody wants to start a new group or a new meeting. A new group or a new meeting is no different than a divorce. You ever talk to people who've been divorced or got through a divorce? It's not a very complicated math problem. You now need two of everything you used to need one of. Same with a group. You had 40 people that paid one rent and funded one GSR and one monthly anniversary meeting. and contributed once to the general service office, the district, and the area, and the intergroup a quarter. Now you have 20 people in two groups, and you have to fund two GSRs, and you have to pay two rents, and you have to, we should really think about it before we start new groups. I want to go, the section on trusted servants and officers is great. In the AA group pamphlet, I do want to mention something that I love in the, if I could find it. The section about the treasurer, I really love. I love the end of it when it says, AA experience shows that it's not a good idea for groups to accumulate large funds in excess of what is needed for rent and other expenses. In other words, have a prudent reserve, take care of your expenses, and get rid of other money. Too much money causes problems. It is wise, though, it says, to keep a prudent reserve. And then it says, group troubles also may arise when extra large donations in money, goods, or services are accepted from one member. So let's talk about that. It's a couple of things that are unique about that. Number one, we like to use the word contributions and not donations. We don't use the word donation. And there's a big difference between a group contribution, between a contribution and a donation. But it says here that if one member is making an extra large gift, that's a donation. And we should stay away from them. We really, really should. I want to talk about, in the section naming an AA group, on the second page of that section on page 18, there's maybe one of the most important paragraphs in this whole pamphlet. Says the primary purpose of any AA group is to carry the AA message to alcoholics. Experience with alcohol is one thing all AA members have in common. It is misleading to hint or give the impression that AA solves other problems or knows what to do about drug addiction. We're not talking about drug usage. We're talking about drug addiction. We don't know anything about drug addiction. The outside world and their influence coming into AA wants to tell everybody that alcoholism and drug addiction are the same. That's not what my big book says. That's not what I believe, but that's not what our program is for. If you happen to stop using drugs or stop any other behavior you wanted out of your life because you got sober in AA, that's great, but you got sober in AA, not clean. We have to keep AA language, AA language. The other thing is, just think about, maybe some of you have had this experience, but I've had it. I have a sponsee that I referred to Gamblers Anonymous. It was a bad situation. A long time ago now. But so bad that he had forged his wife's name on a second mortgage application, because his gambling debts were so bad. And we had a real heart-to-heart. But imagine if I had, and he got, he did okay in GA very well. But imagine I sent him to a GA meeting and all they talked about there was drinking. Imagine all they talked about was alcoholism. That's who we have to keep in mind. The alcoholic who comes to AA who doesn't have those other problems, whether it's drugs, food, codependency, sex, whatever. They're in AA for their problem with alcoholism. And they can't identify in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have to be very, very careful about that. In my last couple of minutes, I want to talk about group inventory. Group inventory is super important. There's a section in the pamphlet. I personally am a big fan of two questions. What is the group doing that's working, and what's not working? Pretty much every question I've ever seen on a group inventory boils down to one of those two questions. But it is important that a group take its inventory every once in a while. Another thing I want to mention about groups is it's very common in today's AA for treatment centers to bring people to groups. Drop off a whole van load. And all people want to do is complain about how those people behave in the meeting. My experience is this. If you're really an AA group, talk about it in your business meeting or group conscience and send someone to go meet with that treatment center. Meet with the person who runs it, who's sending the people to your meeting. Talk about the difficulties that are happening. Talk about how you can better bridge the gap between your group and that treatment center. But if you try to fix the problem by dealing with someone who has 3 days sober, you're never going to fix the problem. I want to talk about rotation. That'll be the last thing I mention. Rotation is super, super important. Super important. Taking a different job, not keeping the same job forever. And, you know, there's an old kind of myth in AA. Somebody says, oh, I've been the treasurer for 6 years because no one else will do it. Well, it's an old spiritual riddle. And it goes like this. You can't fill a filled position. It's impossible. You have to let that position go open. Now, if you're in a group that has so few people, you need people to hold one or two jobs each, fine, that's great. But you don't need to hold the same one or two jobs every year. You can move on to one of the others. But I tell you, this little AA riddle works best when talking about a coffee maker, the person who opens up the building. Let that person not show up for 1 or 2 weeks. I assure you, somebody will be stepping up. Somebody, if that group is not opening, that door is not opening and the coffee's not on, somebody will be stepping up to fill that filled position. But if you keep doing it, no one will step up. And that's no different for GSR or in-a-group rep or anything like that. So that's it. I'm going to leave that as my highlights. I'd need 3 hours to go through the whole thing, but I'll take questions on anything. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much for taking the time to present with us today. No time to entertain questions and answers for 30 minutes. So if you can, please put your questions in the chat to Billy.
So I should take the questions out of the chat.
Yep, if you can. If someone messages me, I'll forward one to you.
Thanks. Let me see. Someone's typing and I can't really hear now. If you could mute, thanks. My experience as a DCM in my town is there are many meetings registered with a service number, that may have once been a group but have now fizzled out to a meeting and themselves don't know the difference between a meeting and a group, nor a GSR or a central office rep. When the third tradition says any two or three gathered together may call themselves a group, but then the new group form, a group change form provided from GSO, says only the list groups, not meetings, then I'm confused as to how we might better do a job with a fellowship as a whole, communicating within our local central office intergroups and the general service structure between districts, areas, GSO, central office, and intergroups between a meeting and a group. That's a great question. It's been going on for a long, long time. We give group numbers to everybody. I hear that the new group registration form is going to let people self-disclose if they say they're a meeting and not a group. But this is a huge problem. I mean, intergroups usually deal with meetings and groups in a particular area. But, you know, GSO has the keys to the kingdom with this GSO group registration number. I would add that there's no such thing as an official registered group. It doesn't exist. There's no GSO seal, good housekeeping seal of approval. All a group number means is that GSO will communicate with you because you say you're an AA group. It does not mean that they say you're an AA group. Do you differentiate between group members and active group members? Everyone can call themselves a member. We have 20 members, but only 5 that are active in service and attend our meetings. When there is a group conscience, who gets a vote? Well, that's up to your own group conscience. There are many that let any group member vote. However, I do know some groups that track, have people sign in for their group conscience. And if you don't go to like 3 in a row or a certain amount in a year, you're no longer a member with voting privileges. But that is a group autonomy issue. Should meeting etiquette continue to the parking lot? Yeah, the parking lot is no different than the meeting. I hate to break it to anyone. Things like politics and last night I was at a convention and a recovery organization with a van with its phone number on the side parked it right outside in the first spot facing where everyone's going in. Someone selling videos for people to get sober on. I mean, no, the parking lot should be just as spiritual as inside and bound by the 12 traditions. Someone texted a question asking to explain about a steering committee. They have never heard of these happening in this district. Please explain. So some groups have a steering committee, which is different than a group conscience of group members. How most of these usually work is they tend to be larger groups. The group kind of meets as a group maybe quarterly or twice a year and votes on elections and things. But the business of the group is handled by the steering committee on a monthly or bi-monthly basis. That's how most steering committees work. Usually you get on the steering committee by... A lot of them are elected to the steering committee. Some groups, it's every past chair of the group is on the steering committee. Some groups, it's every past chair and they have 2 or 3 people they elect onto the steering committee. Let's see.
Hey, I was just going to step in for a second there. If anyone has any questions, can they please send them to just open in the chat or to Billy? Because for some reason, I'm not able to forward them to Billy. I'm having an issue.
Okay.
I think it's the permissions that need to be changed. But please send them in the chat to Billy.
No problem. If all members of a group are eligible for CPC work with their doctors, what about those many in AA who believe AA will help with any addiction? And even the non-alcoholics who think they are members of AA. So we really want them carrying the message to the professional community. Well, I could choose to live in fear or not live in fear, I guess. I don't want non-alcoholics telling doctors about AA, and I don't want people who think addiction and alcoholism is the same talking to doctors about AA. But I don't want to stop the good members of AA and from AA groups talking to their doctors and letting their doctors know about Alcoholics Anonymous. So I don't know how we could stop the other. I think we could start by doing the following. Don't elect any more trusted servants that engage in this behavior. We don't need any delegates that introduce themselves as alcoholics and anything else. We don't need any DCMs or any other position who introduce themselves in AA as anything other than an alcoholic. We could stop inviting speakers to all our big events who don't honor the third and the fifth tradition specifically, and today the sixth tradition on affiliation. So until we start doing it there, but I don't want to stop good members of AA from talking to their doctors. So if you're in a group and other people are in multiple groups in your home group, I don't think it's my business to say anything, but how do you feel? It's my business if they ask me. It's my business when I share to talk about a home group and why I only have one and why that's important. I'm not saying be the AA police, but listen, if you're speaking at a meeting, even if you only get 20 minutes, you could take 3 minutes and talk about home group membership. Let's see. How set are the length of sobriety requirements for GSRs and roles upward from there? I just want to ask someone to explain this question better. The roles or the sobriety requirements are for the individual group conscience to decide. I think they're very suggested, but do some groups change those rules for GSRs and alternate GSRs? They do. At the level of the board, we do not bend the sobriety requirements. If an addict identifies as an addict in an open meeting, do you stop them from sharing? I don't know what your group conscience is. My experience is anytime a good chairperson tries to keep a meeting in order, the rest of the group beats them up. So it's important that the group have these discussions at the group conscience about how do we handle situations like this. I am not a big believer in personal or public humiliation of any kind. But I don't think a group having a group conscience of letting people know it at an open meeting that only alcoholics share there is public humiliation. I just think that's a guideline. How often is it considered healthy for a group to conduct a group inventory? I don't know, every 2 or 3 years probably. Some groups do it every year, but I would say every 2 or 3. Is it okay to talk about the other two legacies in a regular open participation meeting with 3 minute shares? I think so. If you're telling me if you're at an open meeting, can you discuss the concepts or the traditions? Sure. Let me send another question because there's another question here I don't understand. If a group has been a group for 20 years with its name affiliated with the church, should they be informed they are breaking a tradition And if so, by who? Well, I would hope a one or two or three group members would realize it and bring it up at a group conscience meeting, a business meeting. But I hate to say this, but it falls on the DCM and the delegate. You know, it's when you take those positions, you take some responsibility and you're going to want to step up and maybe have a discussion with someone from that group or go to that group's business meeting. We definitely shouldn't have names that affiliate us. They're too confusing for the newcomer. Let's see. Someone asked me about growing up in AA and becoming, if you know, because I became a trustee or a delegate, successful or whatever. Listen, I'm always honest about that. I learned how to use Excel on an AA service committee. I learned how to use WordPerfect on an AA service committee. I learned how to negotiate hotel contracts on an AA service committee. I learned how to take notes in an AA area meeting. AA service has been very good to me. It's not the end all be all, but it's been very good to me. Didn't take coffee pot, took my big book, put AA new meeting flyers on every bulletin board in community, have a safe meeting place. Where should I, one person, go from here? Listen, if you really feel that you need to start a new group, I'm not going to stop you or tell you you shouldn't. I would tell you to make sure it doesn't interfere with other groups and it's not the same day or the same time. But if you really feel you need to start a group, of course, that's your right as an AA member. Is it wise to have someone outside the group facilitate a group inventory? Nope, it's required. I would tell you that a group inventory with a group member facilitating it is not a group inventory. That's one person exerting their self-will. And if they're telling you they're spiritual enough to do it, there's no such thing as that level of spirituality in Alcoholics Anonymous. You need an outside facilitator. Other than AA group pamphlet, what are your next recommendations for good pamphlets that are a must have available for new people? For new people, I guess. I mean, the Traditions Illustrated, Problems Other Than Alcohol, both of them, the AA group pamphlet. I personally love the Member's Eye View. I would start there. Can you tell me the difference between the long form of the traditions versus the short form? Does the short form replace the long form? No, they don't. They were just convenient to put on a poster in the front of the room. The 12 traditions are the long form. How does the chairperson deal with people who insist on preaching the gospel in a discussion meeting? That's an interesting question. I just got this question the other day about somebody that was reading scripture at a retreat, at an AA retreat. Listen, we need chair people who are willing to step up. We need people who are willing to step up and say that doesn't belong here. But no one wants to be the bad guy or bad girl. Everybody wants to be liked and popular. I can tell you that I was at a meeting. I'm just being honest, my old home group. It was the day after a presidential primary debate. My home group met at lunchtime. After the lead, which was on a topic out of AA literature, the first person to share was, of course, someone with like 30 years and nothing to do with the topic. They said that they were horrified that the people in the presidential debate didn't mention God. And no wonder this country's in such bad shape that no one's in touch with the scripture and the Bible. And it went got worse from there. there were about three shares after that, and then finally like four shares of people who said that doesn't belong here. And I can tell you, after the meeting, a young man came up to a couple of those people. I wasn't the only one who said something, and I wasn't the first person. And this young man, he just said, I'm really glad you guys said what you said. Some of those things he said really made me feel like I don't belong here. I am not a Christian, and I'm gay, and I felt like I didn't belong here. And if not for what you said, I wouldn't have thought I could come back here. And, you know, that's what we forget sometimes. We forget that embracing these traditions is not about those of us that have been here a while. It's about preventing the newcomer from leaving or not coming back. So let's see, next question. We have a group, I'm not going to say where, I keep usually towns out of it, that is now 74 years old and is named after the church the meeting is held in. Is there a grandfather clause? There's really not a grandfather clause, but we have an unofficial grandfather clause. If they've been doing it before we had the tradition, then people just kind of accept it. If I was a member of that group, I would vote to change it. Any other questions? Let's see. The question is a real struggle for me. Please disregard if you already answered. The ability to be introduced to other groups virtually has highlighted how my group could improve and better carry the message. My suggestions fall on deaf ears and eye-rolling reactions. I want to keep trying, but at what point does one give up and start a new group? I think you got to wait a whole year. That's my personal belief. You give it a year. You give it a whole 12 months of new people coming in the group and them hearing what you have to say and business meetings. And if after that, I don't think anyone can blame you that you started a new group. When is it acceptable to ask people to leave a meeting? Someone just reminded me that that pamphlet about the group treasurer donation will be taken out of the next printing of the group pamphlet. Thank you. I think a group has to have a solid group conscience on when somebody should be asked to leave a meeting. If they're disruptive to the point a meeting can't go on, if they're dangerous or threatening to other AA members, if they're doing something that the church says or the community center or the clubhouse, whoever the landlord is, says that can't occur here and they do something like that. Remember, AA is a funny organization. You can't have your membership card revoked, but you can be an AA member standing out in the parking lot of the meeting you just got thrown out of. Or the group you just got thrown out of. You get to still be an AA member, but you don't get to disrupt AA for everyone else. Did you say an AA member shouldn't share their problems during an AA meeting? Is there anything in our literature that speaks to what can and can't be shared during a meeting? So I'm more focusing on open meetings, that I think that is a place to share. Our story in a general way of how we recovered from alcoholism. I'm not saying if your dad died or you got sick or something that you can't lean on your group. Of course you can. What I'm saying is AA meetings are not group therapy. I'll talk about elections a little bit. If you're electing the person who's in the bathroom as your GSR, do us a favor, don't elect them. If that's the kind of GSR you're sending to the assembly in the district, we need GSRs who want to be GSRs. We need the best people. We need the most dedicated. We don't need to just give it to someone. Next question. Is there a suggested dress code? Someone was told they shouldn't wear low-cut clothing. That's a group conscience decision. I believe in the first tradition. There's no money or conformity. I don't think men or women or any people should be told how to dress, but I respect individual groups that have a group conscience telling people how to dress, who speak there or do service. If I don't want to do it, I don't have to go. As far as this whole thing about low cut and everything else, it's none of my business to tell people how to dress. I'll tell you what is my business. As a man who thinks safety is a top priority, any man who blames violent behavior on the way a woman dresses, that is so far out of line. Violent predatory behavior is not caused by how someone else dresses. It's caused by violent predatory people who have no business being allowed to stay in AA groups if they can't control themselves. It has nothing to do with how other people dress. So those are two issues I want to separate very clearly. Because I've heard some people say ridiculous things like, "Did you see how she dressed?" That does not cause bad behavior. It does not cause criminal behavior. Now, if your group suggests how people should dress who are at the podium or do service or speak, that's your group's right. And it's somebody's right to say no, they won't come. Can you distinguish between the only requirement for membership and the only requirement to be a good member of your AA group, please? I really appreciate your wisdom. The only requirement for drinking, if or not, you know, the only requirement is the desire to stop drinking is for alcoholics, period. Example, the landlord says you need a mask and a vax passport, but a member says the only requirement. Well, that member's crazy. Don't listen to crazy people in AA. What more can I say? I mean, how hard can I, stress this, that your landlord gets to make whatever rules it wants and your members get to decide if they can live with those rules? I base everything on driving. I once had a man that I did not like say to me in a parking lot when I was a teenager in an AA meeting, he said, "Billy, I thought your license was suspended." I said, "It is suspended." He said, "But you drove to tonight's meeting." I said, "I needed to get to a meeting." He's like, "We don't do that here." And I finally figured out what he was talking about. Part of being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and rejoining society is I don't get to interpret which laws are for me and which laws are for everybody else. I just don't. If I don't like a law in my particular town or community, there is a way for me to get word to my elected representative. No different than if you don't like a group conscience in your group, you can go to your group conscience. But we don't just get to pick and choose which laws and which group consciences we go by. In your experience, is it possible for an exclusively online group to successfully engage in all three legacies? Is it sufficient for a new person or a fairly new person to belong to an online group? Well, no one will like my answer here. But if it's a new person with zero accessibility issues, no. You're doing them a great, great disservice if you're encouraging them to make their home group online. That's my feeling. Now, if they have an accessibility issue, whether it is a disability, childcare, their age and they can't drive at night, that's awesome. But the dark night of the soul comes for everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. It comes for old timers, and it comes for newcomers, and it comes for everybody in the middle. So, you know, somebody might say, well, is our meeting group location the most spiritual place in our town? I don't know. It might be the Waffle House at 3 o'clock in the morning when one of your members just got news their kid was killed in a car accident. And everybody rallied around and met them at 3 o'clock in the morning at a Waffle House. You ever talk to someone who's been in the hospital and the nurse complained to the AA member in the hospital or asked them, are you famous? You know how many people I know have been in the hospital in AA and their nurses asked, are you famous? Because there's like 40 lunatics in AA who all are trying to get a visitor's pass, who all don't know the person's last name. When the dark night of the soul comes, we're supposed to be boots on the ground AA. Now, I love Zoom. I love AA online. I love reaching different people and getting different messages out. But there is something very local and in person about AA. Should people refrain from wearing political messages on their caps and tees? Yes. In a meeting? Yes. Now, if you're telling me that you just dropped your one kid off at Little League and your other kid off at soccer and your other kid off who knows where, and you also worked that day and you got to your meeting and had some political t-shirt on and didn't mean to do it, great. I get it. It happens. But if you're wearing something political on purpose every time you go to a meeting, that's not what AA is for. We should keep political hats and political everything outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. No more questions, I'm told. What about plump? Bumper stickers and AA meeting parking lots, I think it's going too far. What are we going to start regulating? You can't have what religion you are on your car. Can't have a Yankees sticker. You can't, I mean, I think we have to be practical. I know that's difficult because it requires common sense, which in this world today is not really very common. But that's it. I think I am out of time for questions. So thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for your service, Billy, and for everybody participating in today's workshop. It's been really informative. To close the workshop out, I've asked Darlene to read the responsibility statement, which you will find on the back of any AA conference approved pamphlet.
Hi, I'm Darlene, and I'm an alcoholic. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that, I am responsible. Thank you.
Thanks, Billy. That was awesome.
Thank you, Billy.
Thank you, Billy.
Thank you very much, Billy. That was wonderful.
Thanks, Billy.
Thank you, Billy. Thank you for all the information.
Thank you much.
So appreciate much it. Information in 1 hour. That was amazing. Thank you, guys.
Oh,
Oh, thank you so much, Billy. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Thank you, Billy. Thank you, Hugtown Girls.
Thank you, everybody. Happy Easter.
Oh, happy Easter.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Carrie and Cheryl.
Almost got breakfast ready.
Thank you, Stephen and Kyle.
Oh, thank you. If anybody's want a copy of the recording,